Shrimad Raj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Giridas Maharaj Ki Go praying. So what did we discuss in last week's class?
Vidyadhara was freed from punishment from Brahmanas by Chacha Krishna Lord.
Any other points? Anything else? What's that in relation to? Any other points? Okay, so we're going to continue the chapter. We'll finish that tonight. Tomorrow night will be the closed book exam, starting at 7 o'clock here in the theatre. And then there's no class next week. Next week we'll have a week off. No class next week. Tomorrow night we'll have the exam and this 1 week. Okay, so tonight we'll continue. And we continue chapter 34. We'll go to the end of chapter 34. What is chapter 34 called? Yeah, so tonight we'll hear about the second half of the chapter, which is the pastime of Shankachuda being ruled by Krishna. Text number 20. Once Lord Govinda and Lord Ram, the performers of wonderful feats, were playing in the forest at night with the young girls of Raja.
This verse introduces a new pastime. According to Acharya, the occasion mentioned here is the Holika Purnima, the day also known as Lord Purnima.
Any points there? Pastime is performed on Gaura Purnima, which is in March. So, which season is that in Vrindavan? Yeah, winter is finished. And what's after winter? We have spring. Yeah. So it's usually when spring begins. At that time, when spring is manifesting, then Holi is played. That is on Gaura Purnima, which is also known as Holika. So Krishna has gone into the forest in the evening time with the gopis to perform Holika, play Holi. So they've gone into the forest, and because this is that time where spring is manifesting, everything is very attractive. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, of all seasons I am a flower-bearing spring. So in springtime everything manifests very powerfully, very beautiful. And in Vrindavan especially it's very potent. Spring is very attractive. So it manifests the springtime pastime, and Krishna enters into the forest in the full moon and he performs Holi. You can just imagine how much enjoyment there is in the spiritual world. In the material world, the enjoyment is extremely less. But still, we're attached to material enjoyment. But compared to spiritual enjoyment, it is insignificant. Spiritual enjoyment is unlimited. The Krishna has gone into the forest with the cowherd girls. Springtime is there, all the flowers are manifesting, the moon is full. And they begin to play Holi. So you can just imagine how much pleasure there is. So much pleasure that even God himself becomes captivated by the pleasure. God himself enjoys. That's how powerful the enjoyment is. It inspires enjoyment in him. A great Mahotsav manifests. It means a great pastime of great festival manifest. So in the material world, the pleasure that we try to derive is fleeting and is limited. Krishna says to Kalayama Shashvata, temporary or limited. He says within Bhagavad Gita, everything you enjoy in the material world is very limited, and is only temporary, and it is full of suffering. Whereas in the spiritual world, it is the opposite, unlimited enjoyment, unlimited suffering. So much so that even God Himself enjoys. We have to make a choice. You want to stay in the material world and secure the road, enjoy your senses, your Honda, or you want to go to the spiritual world and enjoy with Krishna. If you go to the spiritual world, you have to become selfless, free from lust. So that is the qualification to enter into the spiritual world, into Krishna's pastimes.
You have to be qualified.
What is the qualification?
Your love of Krishna.
Yeah, free of lust. You have to develop prema above the Krishna. Any other points? Text 21. Krishna and Balaram wore flower garlands and spotless garments, and their limbs were beautifully decorated and anointed. The women sang their glories in a charming way, bound to them by affection. So what is interesting about this particular pastime? What is unique about this pastime?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very good. They're enjoying together. Right. Krishna has taken his gopis. Balaram has taken his gopis, separate gopis. Krishna does not enjoy with Balaram's gopis. Balaram's gopis do not enjoy with Krishna. They're separate parties, but they've all merged together to enjoy holy. In the, this is actually at Govardhan Hill, where this is performed. Not far from Kusum Sarovar, in Govardhan Hill. So, Krishna and Balaram together. Normally, this is called Rasa Bas. Krishna will not enjoy pastimes with the gopis in the presence of Balaram. Because Balaram is in the mood of friend, Sakya, older brother. Krishna feels embarrassed to enjoy with his gopis in front of Balaram. Balaram also will not enjoy normally in front of Krishna. So the different rasas which are there. So rasa bas means an inappropriate mixing of mellows or rasa or devotion or moods. So Sakya rasa and Vatsalya rasa and Madhurya rasa normally will not coexist. If Krishna's enjoying Madhurya Rasa with the gopis, then he won't do that in front of the elders in Vatsalya Rasa or in front of his friends in Sakya Rasa. It says in the Braja Riti Chintamani that if Lord Balaram is walking on Govardhan Hill, wherever he walks, the shilas turn into diamond, whitish. Wherever Krishna walks on Govardhan Hill, and the shilas turn dark, like sapphire. Wherever Radharani walks on Govardhan Hill, the shilas turn into gold, golden color. So if Balaram is walking and he sees Radharani's footprints, because all the shilas are golden color, then he will change direction. So they will not coexist or not perform their pastime simultaneously. But in this particular pastime, then Balaram and Krishna are both enjoying simultaneously. It's a very unique pastime. They're dancing and singing together with all of their gopis attending. And there's unlimited enjoyment between the two brothers and their gopis. Any points?
Why?
What? Doesn't discuss a particular reason. Yeah, I'm not sure. It doesn't actually describe why they come together. It's very unique. that they would act like this. Normally, Balaram is not included in Krishna's with the gopis in pastime. So there's a mixing of the rasas. Normally, does not happen. Any other points? The two lords praise the nightfall, signaled by the rising of the moon and the appearance of stars. A lotus-scented breeze and bees intoxicated by the fragrance of
jasmine flowers.
So we see that in the pastime in the forest, as we've described previously, the forest is intoxicated to Krishna and to his devotees. The fragrance of the flowers is overwhelming. Overwhelming means that as soon as you walk into it, they're just completely overpowered by the fragrance. The Vrindavan forest intoxicates Krishna and the devotees. The mood by the full moon light, by the waves of the Jamuna, by the breeze which is cooled and it catches the water particles from the Jamuna and blows with the fragrance of lotus flowers, jasmine, and it becomes completely overwhelming. So Krishna himself is intoxicated. So once again, same as we saw in the Rasa Lila pastime, the Vrindavan forest just erupts with fragrance during the evening time, and Krishna becomes completely overwhelmed by it. He cannot help himself, he just goes straight into the forest. Any points?
Actually, just think about it.
Krishna and Balaram sang, producing the entire range of musical sounds simultaneously. His singing brought happiness to the ears and minds of all living beings. So it describes that when they sang together, they covered the entire range of notes, and melodies, and ragas. It means when they sang together, they interwove their singing. So, as we've said previously, who is the best singer in the creation? It's Krishna. And Balaram. And the best female singer is Srimati Radharani. So when Krishna and Balaram are singing together, it becomes completely intoxicating. So it was like their singing was weaving. Like their voices were weaving in and out of each other. And the way they were singing was just enchanting everyone. So basically it describes that everything that Krishna does is unparalleled. Which means whenever Krishna sings or dances, he is known as Nataraj, which means the best of dancers. Whether he sings or dances, his speech, all of the 64 arts and sciences, Krishna is mastered to the highest degree. So he is the most talented in every single art and science. So when Krishna is manifesting a pastime like this, it becomes the most intoxicating, the most attractive to any devotee. Please come. It becomes the most intoxicating to the devotees. So this is the nature of Krishna's lila, his pastimes. So we hear here that when Krishna is singing with Balaram, then everyone becomes completely overwhelmed. So that is the potency. So together it becomes even more sweeter. And that's why this pastime is very unique. Because Balaram has a very particular mood. And Lord Krishna also has a very particular mood. So then when you combine the two together, it is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that it's like when you get yogurt Yogurt is very palatable, dahi. But then you mix it with some rock candy, some sugar, and then some black pepper, and then different types of spices, and it becomes even more enhanced. But Krishna by himself is wonderful, but then when you add Balaram and Srimati Radharani and the different gopis, and everything becomes even more powerful. That's why Radha and Krishna describes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that originally, you could say in one sense, Krishna was one. You could say Lord Chaitanya is the original form of God. But for the purpose of pastime, eternally, he has expanded into two. Because when you have Radha and Krishna together, then the pastime becomes sweeter. It's like if you take yogurt, yogurt is very palatable, but when you mix it with other ingredients, it becomes more relishable. So in this way, it becomes the most divinely pleasurable experience. So when you mix everything together, right, so Krishna, Balaram, Radharani, the gopis, everyone together, then everything heightens. So Krishna and Balaram, they're the best of singers. But when they sing together, it becomes even more beautiful. When Radharani sings with Krishna, it becomes even more beautiful. As we described, Krishna plays his flute, and Srimati Radharani plays her veena. But when they're playing together, it becomes even more intoxicating. And as we described, when we were describing the Rasa Lila pastime, the last chapter, when they dance, each gopi will come out and dance and perform a solo dance. And you see also the devotees when they're dancing in the temple, and everything becomes very ecstatic. Everyone becomes very enthusiastic, everyone becomes very jubilant. The devotees start going to the middle, and everyone does their little dance. And then they go back, and the next one comes, the next devotee tries to do better. And then he goes, and the next devotee comes, and they try to do even better. And then Jidumba Swami comes, and he does his. And then Bhakti Tita Swami comes, and he does his. You see in the videos, everyone's like, you know, trying to outdo the previous. So in the Rasa dance, each gopi comes. Sudevi, Ranga Devi, Induleka, Tungavitya, Chitrich, and Bhakavata, Vishakala, Lita, but then finally Radharani comes. And Radharani does her solo. And that's the most beautiful. And then Krishna thinks, I will do even better. So then Radharani, then Krishna goes in the middle of the heap. Dances. Amazing. And then the only thing which can surpass Krishna's dancing or Radharani's dancing is when they dance together. But then at the end, they just the two of them come and they do the most amazing choreography. And then at that time, they're singing together also. And then singing together is the highest level of rasa, the highest pleasure. So when Krishna and Balaram in this unique pastime, they're singing together, the gopis are singing, Radharani is singing, and everyone goes to the highest level of pleasure. What's the question? Yeah, they're probably. I don't understand the question. Krishna and Balaram are Krishna and Balaram. Whether all their pastimes, in Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka, they're the closest associates. So not like the material world. In the material world, relationships deteriorate. In the spiritual world, the relationships enhance eternally. So.
Is that
what you're asking? Friendly fear.
Yeah.
Friendly fear. Yeah, no, it means if the elder brother is called Dalji. Dalji means older brother. Krishna always respects Balaram as the older brother. So that's the mood. The brothers mean equal. With your brother, you're equal. So if the older one's there, then you know, some respect there as well. So Balaram and Krishna, Sakyaras, but there's some aspect of Vatsalya also. Balaram feels protective of Krishna because he's slightly younger. Is that answer right? Yeah. So that doesn't change. In all the pastimes, in Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka, those pastimes remain the same. Any other point? We're discussing chapter 34, the pastime of Sankachuda. Very esoteric pastime. The gopis became stunned when they heard that song. Forgetting themselves, O king, they did not notice that their fine garments were becoming loose and their hair and garlands disheveled. So it describes they become stunned in intoxication. When they witness Krishna and Balaram singing and dancing, the gopis become practically stunned. It actually describes, the acharyas describe, actually faint. They're just so overwhelmed by Krishna and Balaram's dancing. They become so happy and so intoxicated, they just, some of them pass out. Or they just become stunned. There's so much ecstasy. This is one of the ecstatic bhavas or ecstatic experiences that one can have on the level of prema or bhava bhakti. When one gets very advanced and becomes fully Krishna conscious, then one becomes stunned in ecstasy. That's the type of ecstasy the gopis have. This is only experienced when one has love of God. It can't be artificially imitated. We have some maybe small experiences. When you're with a very advanced devotee, you may become like stunned or you don't know what to say, what to do. And so you get something like that. It's not obviously not of the same intensity that the gopis are experiencing. But still we have some understanding. So they were so intoxicated and so overwhelmed that the ecstatic symptoms made all of their senses almost stop. So when a devotee sometimes describes the nectar of devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, when a devotee is experiencing ecstasy in Krishna's service, sometimes he damns the ecstasy. He says, damn it. He says, it's stopping me from doing my service to Krishna. Just like Daruka. Who is Daruka? Krishna's chariot driver. So in Dwarka, he drives Krishna's chariot. So his service sometimes is to fan Krishna with the chamara. So he's fanning Krishna, but then he's in so much ecstasy that Krishna is there in front of him. As he's fanning, his eyes become overwhelmed with tears. When you have too many tears in your eyes, you can't see clearly. And then he says, damn these tears. Because now I can't see Krishna properly. I'm serving him, but I can't. So it's stopping my service to Krishna. So sometimes when the devotee experiences these ecstasies, they think, I wish I was not experiencing this, because it is stopping me from serving Krishna. Just like we heard in the last few chapters, what happened when the gopis would blink? They curse Lord Brahma. They say, what sort of a creator are you? Useless person. You foolish person. When we blink, we can't see Krishna for a fraction of a second. What is the use of your creation? If you're intelligent, then you would not have created eyes that blink. What is your defective? So this is the level of advancement they have when sometimes the ecstasies come. But for us it means that for advanced stories they think if there's anything which stops them from serving Krishna, even their own ecstasy, they want to renounce that. We should also learn this example. We can't be like the Gopis in the level of intensity they had, but we should also think. We do not want obstacles to stop us from serving Krishna. And when you become advanced in Krishna consciousness, you don't allow anything external to inhibit your service to Krishna. It's like sometimes you see devotees, you know, some obstacles there, and said, "Oh, I hurt my finger, I can't do my service today." Mm-hmm. This is not the attitude of a devotee. A devotee will serve Krishna under any circumstances, and he will not let any obstacle overcome. Even like a few years ago, we had the Rath Yatra here in Melbourne. And you heard the story of Ajita Prabhu, the temple president, new governor. So you heard what happened? You know, the Rath Yatra, you know, when we go under the bridge, and you know that canopy comes down and then it comes up. We didn't know, all of us were just dancing, but he was up there, he's the person who drives, and he's the temple president from New Governor. So it got stuck and it wasn't going up again. So he got up and then he was pushing it, and then the metal bar fell down and actually cut off his toe. Right? It hit his foot, it didn't. It hit his shoe. Even he didn't realize. He knew that it was sore. He just kept driving. He just got back on where he was sitting on the chair and kept driving. And then another half an hour, 45 minutes or 1 hour, you know, went all the way around. And he was in a lot of pain. And then he gets off the chair, and then when he took off his sock, he saw his toe was hanging off by some ski. He had to go to the hospital. He didn't even tell the devotee. No one knew where he was. He went to the hospital. One devotee took him to the hospital. And someone rang him later in the day. "Where are you?" "And I'm in the hospital, my toe." So this is what it means to serve Krishna. And some devotees, "Oh, my little finger, so I can't do my service today. I've got a headache too, I can't do my service today." I mean, if you've got a serious problem, okay. Probably rest, but generally we don't let our service stop under any circumstance. That is Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was like that. Prabhupada would not let any circumstance stop him from doing his service to Krishna. Any points?
And then both his blame Lord Brahma during the eyes. You can see Krishna.
I just said that. Thank you for reiterating that. Okay. Okay. Which verse we're up to? 35. While Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram thus played according to their own sweet will and sang to the point of apparent intoxication, a servant of Kuvera named Shankachuda came upon the scene. Well, this is Shankachuda. So as we've seen, each of the personalities, each of the demons that appear in Krishna's pastime, they represent particular types of anartas. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, each of the demons represents different anartas. This is Shankachuda. So what does he represent? Shankachuda represents the desire for name and fame and the association of the opposite sex. These two things. Pratishtha. Pratishtha means desire for recognition, to be recognized, and desire for associating with the opposite sex. If you analyze it, basically this is our whole problem in the material world. How does Maya bind us in this material world? The desire to associate with the opposite sex. Basically, it's how we're all kept within this material world. Lifetimes have been kept in the material world for the same reason. Well, so many lifetimes we were there. this lifetime we're attached to a particular man or woman. In previous life we're attached to a different man or woman. In previous life we're attached to a different man or woman. So now, you know, we bring a photograph of your last life and we show you your wife or your husband. You look at them and you think, I don't even know them. This lifetime you're so attached to this particular, in the previous life it was someone else. So this is the way Maya continues to bind them. The point is the desire is there. The desire to associate with the object. That's what keeps us in the material world. That desire has to be purified. So you replace that desire with the original desire to associate with Krishna. It's just a perverted desire of, instead of wanting to associate with Krishna and serve him, you want to associate with someone in the material world. And the desire for name and fame. The desire for name and fame is called pratishtha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says this is the most difficult desire to give up in devotional service. The desire to be recognized by other devotees. This is the most difficult to give up. You want to be famous. You want other devotees to know you, to recognize you. And then if you do become recognized and a little famous, you want them to worship you. Offer you dakshina, bow to you, touch your feet, bathe your feet, worship you, wave the chamara, and jai guru day. It happens. The only reason it doesn't happen to us because we're not very advanced, but when you become a little advanced, everyone begins to offer you respect. And then you become attached to that respect. And you become more attached to the respect than the service to Krishna. It becomes your motivation. And my main motivation, I want to be recognized by the devotees. So this is the anatta which Sankachuda represents, the desire to be recognized by others. I want name, I want fame. Everyone should know who I am. And it becomes our impetus to perform devotional service. So sometimes you get that. You know, when you perform devotional service, you become a little advanced, you become a little famous, you get a reputation, people respect you, but then sometimes Krishna takes it away. And Krishna wants to say, will you serve me regardless? Whether you have, as he says in Bhagavad Gita, honor, dishonor. When everyone's honoring you, do you serve me? When everyone's dishonoring you, do you serve me? Krishna says, gain and loss. And when you've got something, when you've got lots of money, you serve Krishna. When Krishna takes all that money away, you still serve him. Happiness and distress. Easy to serve Krishna when you're happy, but what about when you're distressed? And then all these dualities. Krishna wants to see, will you keep serving him under all circumstances? The Sankachuda represents these things. Any points? Some benefit is there. Mm-hmm. He approaches Krishna in the wrong mood, that's the thing. He's in offense. Tries to take a gopi, and then we see what happens to him in this world. His fortune is that he is killed by Krishna. That's his fortune. He's unfortunate because he comes with the wrong mood. If you come with the wrong mood towards Krishna, what does Krishna do? That's what happens to Sankachuda. Which we'll read in the next couple of verses. O King, even as the two lords looked on, Sankachuda brazenly began driving the women off toward the north. The women who had accepted Krishna and Balaram as their lords began to cry out to them. In the Vedic culture, it says there are five innocent groups that should always be protected. So what are the five groups? Children, women, prominent, cows, and
all people.
These five have to be protected under all circumstances. That is Vedic culture. Vedic culture means when those five are being protected. When those five are not protected, you get Asuric culture, which is the modern world. Because women are not being protected, children are not being protected, cows are not being protected, all people are not being protected, and Brahmanas are not being respected and protected. So because of this, then you have an Asuric culture, which means the civilization becomes degraded. The civilization flourishes when these five are protected. So when women and children and old people and Brahmanas and cows are looked after, everything becomes auspicious. That's Vedic culture. That's why you see in the Vedic culture, for example, when Lord Ramachandra was on the earth, we read in the ninth canto, the whole earth was very opulent. Why is it opulent? Why is it auspicious? Why is everything there? Why is everything peaceful? Because these five are being protected. That's the duty of the king. But these days, the rulers are not, they have no idea. It's like, you know, if you look at the news, and Donald Trump, might be in big trouble. Some allegations are there, some conspiracy and some controversy. They're everywhere, you see. And you see in Australia, every time you listen to the news, cows are being abused, or old people, or children, or women, or holy people are not being respected. So this is the Vedic civilization becomes destroyed when these are not protected. And Krishna, when he is personally present, he would not allow this to happen. When Krishna is personally present, cows and all these other groups will be protected. And you see in this situation, the women, Krishna's own associates, his eternal consorts, they're not being respected. Krishna becomes very powerful in his retaliation. So we also have to be like that. If we see those five are being abused, we have to become very strong. Like now they're having, they even put posters here in the temple. Because in the Hindu community, the Indian community, it's everywhere, but in the women are getting abused. Sometimes the husband's beating the wife. It's almost like it becomes almost like an accepted cultural part of the culture. Or the husband's allowed to beat the wife. And then they don't tell. And then in the statistics I heard, I think even in Melbourne, 30 Indian women were murdered in the last 12 months by their husbands. Beaten to death or something like that. I think the figures are actually... That sounds extraordinary. So we're talking about Melbourne. I think they're accurate, those figures. So this is because the women are, it's culturally unacceptable. To abuse the women is culturally unacceptable. And then it becomes like culturally acceptable, like the woman has been, but then other people know, but they won't say anything. So if we're devotees in ISKCON, it's our duty, if we hear anything, we hear anything, anywhere in our community, inside ISKCON, we hear a woman is not being treated properly or a child is not being treated, immediately we have to act. You can't say, well, it's not my position. No, it is your position, because you know. And you are Krishna's representative. You can say, well, I'm not Krishna's representative. No, but you are Krishna's representative. Because you come into this temple, it means you're Krishna's representative. So if you know anything that's going on, you have to act. You have to do something about it, which means you have to go to the authority. Either you do it yourself or you go to the authority or you start making noise. Telegraph. So that these things can be dealt with appropriately. So that is the system. The Krishna will not tolerate. And if we ignore, if we know something's going on and we ignore it, Krishna will give us reactions because you're not doing your duty properly. Just like I was like, go over down the hill a few years ago, as so I was chanting my japa. We had a japa retreat. I was sitting there and going down hills, like just where the wall is, very close to you. So I'm chanting. And I'm, you know, I was absorbed in my chanting. So, you know, I was like, you know, I didn't want to break my meditation. So then, you know, Janavi Harrison, you see it a month ago or so, famous kid on it. So she walked past, you know, walking down Govardhan. And actually, Govardhan, around Govardhan Hill, it's not safe. Women. So you should know living in government. Not safe. Make sure you're always protected. So she's walking by herself. And I thought that's, you know, I'm chanting, but because I was going to exalt my chanting, I didn't want to, you know, stop my chanting. So I saw her and I thought that's not very good. You know, I thought, no, I don't want to break my chanting. So I'll just keep chanting. I saw her, she walked past and she walked a couple of hundred meters down, but then I saw some boys walk out and they started following her. I thought, oh, no. But then I had to get up and walk, you know, 300-400 meters to catch her. And I said, hey, and I told the boys, get out of here. And then I said to her, Dusty, don't walk by yourself. That's okay. And you go back to where the devotees are. So, you know, I thought that, you know, my higher duty, I thought, was my chanting. Oh, you know, I have to chant. It's the most important duty, focus on the holy name. But then Krishna didn't like that. And then when some boy came, and he made me get up, and I had to interrupt myself. I could have just said to her in the beginning as she walked past. I neglected my duty to protect the women. But then Krishna said, okay, then, you don't want to interrupt your chanting, I'll totally interrupt your chanting. And then I had to get up and walk, and then I had to come back and settle down. So that is the point. The point is we must protect the women, the children, the cows, the old people, and the brahmanas. That is Vedic culture, and everyone has that responsibility. And if you neglect that, then you're not acting on behalf of Krishna. Any points?
No, of course.
What are you saying not possible? What are we doing at Hare Krishna Valley? Then you protect the cows at Hare Krishna Valley. Okay, you can't protect every cow in Australia because there's a demoniac arrangement for cow slaughter. But at least there's one place where you can give money, where you can give time or energy. You can do seva, serve the cows. So at that point, so you can serve the cows there. Or in India, there's different goshalas. You can. Okay. Yes, there's many ways we can. It's difficult in this age to protect the cows, but at least in some ways we can go save them. Hearing their devotees crying out, Krishna, Rama, and seeing that they were just like cows being stolen by a thief, Krishna and Balaram began to run after the demon. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Why did he come? Avitranaya sadhana. Vinashaya. Vinash. What does Vinash mean? Destroy. Vinash. Eradicate. Vinashaya. Cha. Dushkrita. If someone is Dushkrita, it is Dushkrita. Dushkrita means someone who performs. Dushkrita means bad activity, any negative activity. Yeah, Dushkrita. So Krishna says, Vinash. Generally, you'll come and you'll reason with the person first. Just like there's some made. What is the order? Right at the end, there's done. So in the beginning, you know, we try to be nice. We try to speak to the people nicely. We try to say, hey, come down. But at the end, if they do not cooperate, then dunda. Dunda means you take the rod and you chastise. So similarly with the miscreants, Krishna was like that. When Krishna, the battlefield of Kurukshetra was coming, the battle was looming. First of all, Krishna went to the Kauravas and he said, please do not fight. He tried to negotiate. He said, just divide the kingdom. Half for the Pandavas, half for the Kauravas. Right? And they said, no. And then Krishna said, okay, then give 5 villages. They're Kshatriyas, give them 5 villages. He said, no. Duryodhana said, I won't even give as much land as I can drive the pin into. In other words, he's saying, I'll give nothing. And then they tried to capture Krishna. Duryodhana said, arrest him. And then Krishna expanded himself in many forms. Balaram manifested, the Pandavas manifested, all the demigods. So then the soldiers went back. So Krishna tried to negotiate. Then when the negotiation was not successful, then Krishna went back to Yudhishthira and he said, there's no choice, we have to fight. So that is our last option. But if there's no other option, then that is the course of action. So Krishna, Vinash means he will destroy. That's why he tries to negotiate with them. Hey, okay, but if they will not, then we have to be like that also. You know, we try to be reasonable. It's like when you have children, right? With the kids, you have to say, listen, you negotiate. And after some time, you say, hey, I said enough, enough. That's it. No more. You stop. Stop your nonsense. You have to be a little heavy, a little forceful. But Krishna is like that. He tries to be reasonable, but if not, then he becomes very ill. Sankachuda. He's acting improperly. He's now Krishna's Vinash. Let's see what Krishna does to him. Any points? The Lord's called out in reply, do not fear. Then they picked up logs of the Shala tree and quickly pursued that lowest of Guyakas, who swiftly ran away. So it says the devotees became, or the Lord said to the devotees, do not fear. What was Prabhupada's name? Abhaya. Abhaya. Abhaya means fear. Abhaya means one without fear. So when one is feeling Krishna's protection and Krishna's presence, there is no fear. The only reason we feel fear is when we forget Krishna. If you remember Krishna, there is no fear. So as soon as you remember Krishna, there's no fear. Krishna said to the devotees, do not fear. I am here. What is the difficulty? It's just one demon. I'll take care of it. Masuja. Do not fear. So the pure devotees do not have any fear. That's why Prabhupada was called Abhay. Abhay means no fear. Karanaravinda. This is at Krishna's feet. And you saw Prabhupada was like that, actually. He was fearless. And Prabhupada would just do things fearlessly. As I was speaking today with the devotees, Prabhupada was in Chicago and or Detroit, one of the cities. He said to the police officer, he was having darshan with Prabhupada, he said, give me that building over there. Prabhupada was serious. Give me the building. Free. You know, big building. He said, you give me the building, and then we will start a program. We will get all your people off drugs. And the police officer was saying to Prabhupada, so many problems with drugs these days. Prabhupada said, then you give me the building, right? And we will start a program. We will get everyone off drugs. Yeah. The Prabhupada was saying he was bold. He would do things like that. No fear for Krishna. It's someone he just met for the first time. Imagine if you meet someone, you know, someone comes to a police officer and you say, you know, give me the building. Give me the town hall, or give me something. Prabhupada would actually say those things. When he met them, he'd say, give me this, or give me that. He did not have any fear, because he understood this was for Krishna's sake. We should also learn to be fearless, right, by relying on Krishna. If you rely on Krishna, you have no fear. The only reason we're fearful is because we're not attached to Krishna enough. Any points?
Where did it work?
Guyaka. Means they're like the yakshas, the associates of Kubera. Like a demigod. If you can apply it. When Shankachuda saw the two of them coming toward him like the personified forces of time and death, he was filled with anxiety. Confused, he abandoned the women and fled for his life. So, when he saw Krishna and Balaram running, how did he see them? Death and time. So if death is coming towards you, how do you feel? A little bit scared. Most of us feel scared. If death is coming, you get a little bit anxious. When time is dragging you away, you also feel some anxiety. Unless you're very advanced in Krishna consciousness, then there's no fear. But generally, we feel a little bit scared. So Shankachuda, you saw Krishna and Balaram coming at him. It was like same as Kamsa. We'll see Kamsa is coming up. So then Kamsa is the same. He sees when Krishna walks into the arena in Mathura, he sees this is death personified. So Shankachuda is a very powerful asura, very powerful personality. When he sees Krishna, he just becomes completely fearful. So, Prabhupada points out in the second canto of the Bhagavatam. The second canto of the Bhagavatam says, if you have a head on your body, which all of us do, we have a head, if your head does not voluntarily touch the ground before Krishna, when we go into the temple, voluntarily we put our head on the ground. If you don't voluntarily bow your head before Krishna, the Bhagavatam says your head is just like a weight, it's like a burden on your body. You have to carry it around, it's there, but it's just a burden. But it's meant to bow voluntarily, meant to put it on the ground before Krishna. And Prabhupada points out that if you do not voluntarily put your head on the ground, at the time of death you're forced to put your head on the ground. But if you don't voluntarily bow down before Krishna, at the time of death Krishna forces you. Krishna says you won't do it. Of your own accord, I'll make you do it. So we're better off bowing voluntarily. So when we go into the temple, we bow down. Even one time, one devotee said to Prabhupada, when I come before you, I don't feel like bowing down. Prabhupada said, do it anyway. And then it will become natural.
Did you say with it?
He said, just do it and it will become natural. Go in and bow before the deities, and then in due course of time you'll become very enthusiastic to bow your head. You like bowing now. We should feel like that. We should feel like we like to bow before. Any points? Lord Govinda chased the demon wherever he ran, eager to take his crest jewel. Meanwhile, Lord Balaram stayed with the women to protect them. Who is Lord Balaram? Okay. Who is Krishna? Cowherd boy, very good. Any particular cowherd boy? in the food. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mm-hmm. Who is Balaram?
Balaram, who is it?
Prabhupada said he is the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. So, Lord Balaram shows us how to serve Krishna. That's why he is called the Adi Guru. Krishna becomes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Balaram becomes Lord Nityananda Prabhu. Lord Nityananda is the original Guru. Balaram is the original Guru. Why? Because the Prabhupada said they are servitor Godhead. They teach us how to serve Krishna. Nityananda is the best servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Balaram is the best servant of Krishna. So he's teaching us how to serve. So the nature of Balaram, there was one song by Narottam Das Thakur about Lord Nityananda. And it says, Bahu Koti, Krishitana. His lotus feet are like millions of moons. When the moon rises, everything becomes very cool and soothing. When there's millions of moons simultaneously, everything becomes very soothing. Lord Balaram's feet, Lord Nityananda's feet, are like thousands of moons, millions of moons. They soothe us. But Balaram gives us soothing protection. His complexion is white like milk. Milk is very soothing and very calming. So, now Lord Balaram, he's very soothing, very calming. And he gives devotees shelter. And he says to Krishna, go and get him. Go and kill this guy. I'll look after the gopis. When Balaram is there, we feel protected. You have to approach Lord Nityananda before you approach Lord Chaitanya. You have to approach Lord Balaram before you approach Krishna. If you don't get Balaram's mercy, you can't get Krishna's mercy. If you don't get Nityananda's mercy, you can't get Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So we approach them, and they give us shelter. It says Lord Nityananda does not accept offenses. So we need his shelter, his mercy, and then we can. Okay. Any points?
In the last chapter we saw in Rasadanta, even the demigods and we're not able to see the deities, we're only able to see lots of characters and the books on the last. But in this chapter we see that Rasadanta not only were able to see the gopis and
yeah, I mean, it says that when Ravana saw Sita, it was a Maya Sita. But when Shankaracharya came, it may have been like that. May not be the original Gopi, maybe like some Maya. Something like that. Anything? The mighty Lord overtook Shankaracharya from a great distance, as if from nearby. My dear king, and then with his fist the Lord removed the wicked demon's head. Together with his crest jewel. Sometimes, even as devotees, we do something which is not pleasing to Krishna. You ever do something like that sometimes? Something that doesn't make Krishna happy? Okay. It's true. Sometimes we do things which doesn't make Krishna happy, but it's only because we're less intelligent. Because if we're intelligent, you have to understand nothing escapes Krishna's knowledge or his purview. Or you might go off and think, oh, I'm doing it. No one can see me. No one knows. But Krishna's there. He's there even before you get there. He knew you were going to do it 10 million years ago. Right? He knows everything. So there's no escaping. So Sankachuda tries to take the gopis, but then when he sees Krishna coming, he thinks, oh, now I'll run away. How are you going to run away from God? Now, there's one person you can't run away from, it's Krishna. So he's doing something wrong, Krishna comes, now I'll escape. But then as he runs, Krishna's already there. It's foolish. And then this verse describes, what does Krishna do? He punches his head off. You know, that just shows how hard Krishna must hit him. Krishna's very upset because he's insulted Krishna's devotees. When Prahlad was attacked by Hiranyakashipu, his father, what did Krishna do? He ripped out of a pillar, so angry, and he got him, ripped over his stomach, he ripped it open. So angry, he reached in and grabbed his intestines and wrapped them around his neck. I mean, you have to be really angry to do that. Rip someone. Like if I'm really angry, then I rip you apart and then I grab him really like that. So angry. Krishna doesn't just punch you, he punches his head off. We never see that. You never see someone hit so hard that their head just goes off. That's how angry he was. When you touch my gopis, he grabs him, smashes his head off. And he grabs his head and rips the jewel off, the beautiful jewel. He rips the jewel off and he throws his head. He's very angry. The point is, when Krishna sees anyone doing nonsense, he gets happy. Have you experienced this in your life? When you do something nonsense, Krishna just comes in like, ready. We have to learn to be obedient. We just have to learn to be good. It's difficult because we have a nature to enjoy independently from Krishna. As soon as you do that, he comes. Krishna does not muck around. You see what he does to all these demons. There's a few demons coming up we haven't got to yet. Keshi and Arista, they're coming up in the next few chapters. You see what he does to those two. Krishna is very nice, but when someone's not acting properly, he has another side to him. You don't want to see that side. And when he gets the demons, I mean, he kills them. Very, very well.
Did you see what does that?
Okay. Having thus killed the demon Sankachuda, and taken away his shining jewel, Lord Krishna gave it to his elder brother with great satisfaction as the gopis watched. So why did he give it to Balaram? Because if he gives it to one gopi, what are all the others going to say? Everyone will be upset. Right? So he gives it to Lord Balaram. Because if he gives it to Balaram, then none of the gopis can be upset. But then who does Balaram give it to? Balaram gives it to Srimati Radharani. Because Balaram knows Krishna's desire. Prabhupada explains this, when you're a first class disciple, you know the heart of the guru. So when you're advanced in Krishna consciousness, you know exactly what the guru wants. But Balaram, because he's the original guru, knows what Krishna wants. So Krishna gave him the jewel. And who does Krishna actually want to give it to? Brother Rani. But he can't because everyone else will get upset. He gives it to Balaram. As soon as Balaram takes it, he knows what Krishna wants. So later on, when no one's around, he says, Radharani, can you take it? And that jewel, later on in the 10th canto, we won't get to it this year, but maybe next year, that jewel is called the Jamadaka jewel. The jewel comes up later on. The jewel will reappear. It's a special jewel. It causes a lot of problems later on. But for now, things Balaram gives it to Radharani. Mati Radharani Ki.
Yeah.
So tomorrow night we have the exam, 7 o'clock here in the theatre if you want to come. Today is the most auspicious appearance day of my dear godbrother Rupa Raghunath Prabhu. Today is his Vyasa Puja. So normally when someone's birthday you give them blessings, but we ask for his blessing. He's our senior Vaishnava. We're very honored to have his presence here today. Thank you for his blessing. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Okay.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Hare Krishna. I will ask you a question actually. I'm going to answer it. Is there any Lord Krishna came to all the heavens?